Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's T-A-I. LORMADE101.com and click on affiliates for details. Today we have a magnificent show for you. We're going to be talking about the new GOP. That's right, Donald Trump, Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, Michelle Bachmann, and Rush Limbaugh. And I would love to get your comments on where you think the Republican Party is going. So sound the alarm, get on Facebook, Twitter, send out emails and text messages, call your friends and family, and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments, click the follow button, or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101, and I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Our hearts go out to the victims of the tornado that struck the South this week. In fact, I am from Alabama, and I called my family midweek and to check on them to make sure everything was okay. And there was a monster tornado that devastated Tuscaloosa down there on Wednesday. And there was it was reported about 258 tornadoes during the week, surpassing the nation's worst tornado outbreak. Previously, there was about 148 on Palm Sunday in about 1974. And previously before that, it was around, around 66 tornadoes that were reported in May in 1999 in Oklahoma City. But the latest reports out of Clayton, Alabama, was that by the Associated Press says that an additional death in Franklin County has increased the death toll in Alabama from the storms and tornadoes to 250. Now, the Alabama Department of Emergency Management says Franklin County now has 28 fatalities. It said that Tuscaloosa County leads the state with 39 deaths, followed by DeKalb County with 33, Jefferson County with 20, while Lawrence, St. Clair, and Walker counties have 14 each. Other counties reporting fatalities are Calhoun with 9. Now, I'm from Calhoun County area, but I was fortunate enough not to receive any of my family members did not receive any major damage. But I would like to thank all the people for sending me emails and text messages, tweets, and Facebook posts. And my family was not directly affected by the storm, but still keep them all in your prayers. And we would continue to keep the people down in the South lifted up. And on a lighter note, I don't know if you heard this or not, but I want to send out congratulations to Nick Cannon and Mariah Carey. They're the proud parents of twins. Mariah Carey and Nick Cannon celebrated their third anniversary with another milestone, becoming parents to a baby girl and a baby boy. It was being reported that Cindy Berger, one of Carey's representatives, confirmed the birth to the Associated Press, and the superstar gave birth Saturday around 12:07 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at an undisclosed hospital in Los Angeles. Cindy says that the baby girl was born first. She weighed in around 5 pounds and 3 ounces and was about 18 inches long. Her brother was about 5 pounds 6 ounces and was a little bit taller. He came in around 19 inches. Now, there was some reports that Nick Cannon drove to the hospital in his Rolls Royce, a Phantom, that is, and Carrie, who had gone through so a couple of false labor planes previously, was calm, thinking that it was another false alarm. But it turns out that it was the real deal. And, of course, Cannon was kind of nervous. He was so nervous that he went to the wrong department at the hospital, but was gently guided to the maternity ward by the nurses. Now, I can also understand what Nick Cannon was going through, because approximately 5 years ago, I was in this same situation in Alabama, to be exact, definitely understand what that looks like to be, you know, of course, nervous and to be kind of, you know, have a little anxiety about what's happening there. So, but again, congratulations out to Nick Cannon. Also, I was kind of a little stirred by some news about the gas prices. I don't know what's going on with these gas prices, but it would be nice to understand what's going on with them. But the oil companies keep making profits after profits, and the gas prices just keep going up. So I would love to, you know, to know what's the deal, and would love to take to figure out what's going on, to hear from you all out there, the callers. And I don't know if you heard this or not, but by now I'm sure you have. President Obama finally released his long-form birth certificate this week, a step that injected him directly into the simmering birther issue controversy in the hope that of finally ending or even turning this into his an advantage. But it is very, very interesting how the conversation has shifted from his birth certificate to other documents, papers, if you will. So I would love to get your comments on these and other issues. So do you think it's finally over? Do you think people will stop asking the president for his papers? You know, who knows? So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines. We're going to take your calls. And, of course, get my co-host Jima to weigh in on these issues. We'll be right back. Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced-price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. Now, while we are opening up the phone lines right now, and I would like to get Jima to weigh in on some of the issues. So to join the conversation, remember the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, obviously, the situation in Alabama and across the South is horrible. But we've had Hurricane Katrina, a devastating earthquake in Haiti, another devastating blow to Japan, now the enormity and multitude of tornadoes across the South. What in the world is going on with our weather these days, Jima?
Well, I'm no scientist. I'll leave that part to you, but I just think we're in some times are something's just not right in the atmosphere. Something's off there in the atmosphere, and when that happens, it has to, this is from a layman's perspective, it has to do what it has to do to get itself back on track. So that's just kind of what I think. It's been devastating, though. It's been a lot, and it seems to be more frequent. We're not having time to recuperate before we're on to the next crisis or tragedy. And there's just been so much loss of life during this time over just the last several years. So it's pretty devastating to see. So I can only imagine what the people are that actually have lived through it.
So, you know, I wonder, you know, we've been talking, you know, Al Gore, in fact, he really did some groundbreaking work on climate change, and, you know, people called it global warming, and they went through this massive campaign to change over the, you know, the language and how they present this particular issue. But, you know, we've narrowed it down to this thing called climate change, and I just wonder at what point will we really begin to take this thing seriously? As I mentioned earlier about Katrina and Haiti and Japan and now the multitude of tornadoes across the South, seems to be like they're more violent than I can remember in our recent history, or even, you know, even in my lifetime, I don't remember them being violent. So do you think this has anything to do with climate change?
Well, for what I know about climate change, which isn't much, let me just put that out there. I don't know much about it, but I do know that I don't think we're taking very good care of our planet. I think we're wasteful. I think we allow things to just lay around and not be recycled, which has an impact on our quality of life. So I do believe that some of what we're doing is helping and increasing the chances for some of these things that are happening. But to the degree of what, I don't know, but it's just something that I feel based on the limited information that I do have, that, yeah, I think we're playing a part in it. And how we live, our consumption of things and how we're wasteful with things that we do have, I think we're contributing to it.
You know, a lot of people would go on to say or would side on the fact that we have the increase of fossil fuels and the increase of the way, you know, the more automobiles that we have and how all of these things that we're releasing into the atmosphere, and was bringing me to my next issue here about our gas prices, the fact that, you know, we have so many vehicles on the road these days, not just in the United States but across the world. We're spending, you know, millions and millions and billions of dollars on fuel, and the fact that these gas prices keep going up. You know, at what point do you think that the consumers are going to say enough is enough?
Well, I don't know about the consumers, but I know about this consumer. I have reached my tipping point. As we posted on our blog this week, around it's $4 the tipping point for me. It is when I saw the gas, and I hadn't had to fill up again. So, but it went up it was at $4.03 for unleaded plus. And I just couldn't understand what happened and it wasn't even a 24-hour period, in a less than 24-hour period. And in the week's time alone, I noticed gas went up 20 cents. And I'm just trying to figure out, well, what's happening? I'm not understanding it. I'm not getting it. It's not making any sense to me. And yet I understand, and once again, this is from a complete layman's perspective, I don't know any of this to be factual. This is what I hear on television. But I understand that we have some reserves of oil and gas. And so if we have reserves, then why are we allowing these Exxons and whoever else to treat us in such a manner that we are you know, we're basically being held hostage. When it's like we have the money to pay, so just pay the money. So we have the reserve, so why can't we just use what we have? I thought that's what reserves was for, was to use in, you know, a crisis situation or when you're in dire straits, you go to your savings. And I would say that we're in dire straits right now because we're not making any more money. So you're asking me to stretch this dollar that's losing value daily even further on gas that I shouldn't even have to pay that much for it. So it's just, I'm not really sure what's going on there.
The president talked about this briefly, about the reserve issue. A couple of days ago, I heard him do an interview on one of the morning talk shows, and he was of the impression that we're not there yet with respect to using our reserves. We're not to the point where we have consumed most of the supply out there where we would have to tip into our own pot. So with that in mind, what would it take you to say, you know, enough is enough. I'm going to stop driving. I mean, are you going to stop driving, or what are you going to do?
Well, of course you can't stop driving, and they know you can't stop driving. Our lifestyles now will not allow us to stop driving. We don't live, for the majority of us, close to a bus line where we can get to the bus. We might be closer to a train or something where we can hop, you know, drive to the train station and maybe take the, you know, the train or the DART or whatever to the next location. But, you know, that's not the majority of people. Now, you know, times in the past, you had more bus systems and things of that nature. As a matter of fact, that's one of the things that they're cutting in some of your major urban cities, is they're cutting your bus services and things like that. So even if I was to decide to boycott driving, I wouldn't be able to get anywhere because the bus is not running. So, you know, it's kind of like I'm kind of out there. I have to drive. And whoever that they are, and I don't know who they are, but, you know, they know that we have to drive. So they're able to keep those prices where they are. Now, as much as I respect my president and I trust him, you know, I'm not necessarily sure if I agree with his statement, we're not there yet. Well, what is the there? Maybe $4 is not there to him, but it's definitely there for me. And I doubt if I'm alone in that thought process. There's a lot of people that are there. I don't, you know, we may not be, you know, he stated in terms of us not being there based on what we're using, but we're there based on what we are paying. So they have to make a something. They need to figure out the how to balance that out a little bit.
What dollar amount would get you to change your behavior? Right now we're approaching four. Is four the dollar amount, or is it five, or is it six, or 10, or 15?
Well, I have to say that on a small scale that I have changed my behavior in terms of, you know, long gone are the days where I'm just going to drive around and see what's new in the city. You know, A, don't have that kind of time, and B, with the cost of gas, you know, you can't just go out just taking a nice afternoon drive or whatever. You really have to plan where you're going. And does that mean now that you have no activities, you don't go anywhere, you don't go, I mean, are you just regulated to your home and work, and for me, the grocery store? So the primary places I go. I drop my son off at school, I go to the grocery store, or I'm at church. That's pretty much it for me. So I don't know, I'm not real sure what else I can stop.
Well, I heard that. So I don't know. But the president doesn't seem to think that we're at the point where we need to tap into our reserves. And, you know, I would tend to agree with him because of our behavior. I mean, we're not changing collectively what we're doing. You don't see the numbers take a dip in our consumption, and you know, people will begin to start complaining a lot more, but their actions don't change. So until we reach a point where our actions mimic our conversation, then I believe that we're going to be well on our way to $5 or $6 a gallon. So,
well, here's my point, though. I mean, but to stay there for just one second.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a person that lives in the city, And I already have, you know, cut my driving down by, let's say, you know, 30%. I don't live in an area that has a bus system or a transit system or a train system. So I have to drive to work. I, you know, my drive to work to make a living, a comparable living where I can support my family, is an hour away from where I live. So it's not that, you know, I want that job an hour away, but that's the job that I have because that's the job that's going to take care of me and my family. So how do you, what is it that you tell me to cut back on when I have to drive to work because I don't have a system, a transit system that can get me from an area close to where I live out to where I work?
Well, in some places, in some places people carpool. In other places, they take a transit system. You mentioned the bus, but there are also trains available in most cities. There is also, which could cut down on your commute. So let's say, for example, you were traveling an hour away, as you mentioned, to your job. Well, there may be a train station that's perhaps 20 minutes away, and you take the train station near to where you need to go and then take another, you know, walk to your job or somewhere in close proximity. Carpool is another option. So there are options out there, but I think as a nation, we've gotten so comfortable in our behaviors that, you know, and so spoiled, if you will, in such a manner that we refuse to do that because we refuse to release that autonomy that we have by being able to go and come as we see fit, as opposed to waiting on somebody else or waiting on the system. So there are other alternatives out there, but I think as a nation we're not to the point where we're going to move on any of those actions until, you know, they hit $10 a gallon.
Okay. I just think the system, in terms of how things are lining up budget wise and things that they're cutting, that they're not helping us on any turn either, especially for those people, you know, those of us that might wouldn't mind taking a bus, but, you know, the bus it isn't running at the times I need it to run to get me to work on time. So, I mean, you got, and the reason that it doesn't is because the you know, the city government or the local government or whatever is cutting costs, and so let's cut services. And so it has a direct impact. You know, the local government cutting the transit system to save some money has a direct impact on me being able to drive less.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, you know, what I was depending upon to be able, you know, to not have to pay $5 a gallon, I no longer can because the bus isn't running during those hours anymore. Or it's an hour later, which would make me be working an hour later, and, you know. So it has a direct impact on my day to day. But yeah, I mean, it's possible, but you know, the system in itself has to make some adjustments as well.
Okay, so let's shift the conversation a little bit to something else that's in current events, and that's the president released his birth certificate this week. So by him releasing his birth certificate this week, do you think this is the end of the BERTHA issue?
No, it is not the end of the BERTHA issue.
Why you say that?
Unfortunately, because okay, let me rephrase it. It may be the end of the BERTHA issue, but it's not going to be the end of an issue with the president. There would be something else that a segment of the population would now stand up and talk about.
Elaborate.
So, although he, well, as stated earlier, you know, there's been some reports now about his education and what type of student he was, which is by far the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life, because I've never in my adult life heard of a president's grades from college being called into question. So, you know, now it's what type of college was it? How did he get in there? And how was he able, what was his grades like? What type of classes did he take? This is a new one. I want to know what type of classes he took that may be shaping his policies. that's where we are now. So we've gone from him establishing the fact that he was born here, although he did that 2 years ago when he gave out the original birth certificate, the live birth certificate, to now we want to know how you got, you know, how were you impacted by classes you took in college. I don't know about you, but I took a lot of classes in college for my undergraduate and graduate degrees, and I'm not sure if they shaped how I think about life or not. I don't know. They may have, but I'm not sure if it has a direct impact on how I view society right now.
I'm just interested in the fact that I would like to know what's the deal with people asking for identification these days. You recall that the legislation in Arizona was moving in this direction. Now we come to a place where we're asking a sitting president, not a presidential candidate, but a sitting president, which means you have to go through a series of vetting and vetting in order to be able to get to be a candidate. And then after you become to be the president of the United States with all the clearances and all the background work that has to take place, but now we're asking a sitting president to prove that he is a U.S. citizen or to prove his grades or improve, you know, all of his papers that they're trying to generate, they're asking the president to generate. So has there been another time in our history that this has taken place with any president?
Not to my knowledge, not with the president, no. But has there been another time in history where certain segments of the population was required to produce papers? Yes.
What time are you referring to?
But has it been of a sitting president? No, I don't think it's been of a sitting president. There's times in our history where if you did not have your papers on you as an African American to even show you were free, you had to carry those freedom papers around with you, because if not, they would assume, they being people in charge, would assume that you were a runaway slave and would immediately place you back in slavery if you could not prove you were free, if you could not prove you were supposed to be where you were. And that is the stench of this whole process, is that the President of the United States has to prove that he's supposed to be where he is and that he has to have papers to show that. That is what makes this oh so ugly and has such a smell to it, that it takes you back into a time where people of color were not deemed smart enough, appropriate to be in certain positions, and had to constantly be on guard. And if you failed to have that paper on you, then you could be treated any kind of way. You were not going to be treated like a free person. You were going to be treated back like a slave.
Now, you're not suggesting
that. And that's what makes this so ugly.
You're not suggesting that, you know, that the reason why they're asking the president to show his birth certificate is directly related to this notion of slavery, are you?
I'm not going to say it's directly related, but, you know, they've mastered how to talk in code language. So for me, you're asking a person who for two and a half years ago produced for you a document that showed where he was born, and here we are still 2.5 years later wanting and creating a storyline that says you have proof that he wasn't born here, and you have proof that his grandmother made these statements, he was born in Kenya, and you have proof, and you've heard, and all these innuendos to make, you know, a small portion of the population doubt that he was born here. And no other time in history has a president, a sitting president of the United States of America, had to prove that he was born here, that he was qualified to be in his position. No other time. And so, of course, it has a stench of racism that piece of our history where we always had to walk around with a piece of paper to prove that we could be where we were. Yes, it does have that.
So what about this notion that he was not smart enough to enter Harvard University? Do you think that's still in that same vein?
I definitely think it's still in the same vein, because the difference is that when it's okay to be able to go to a university off of legacy, by legacy off of name and money. As you look at previous presidents, in terms of George, our last president got into Yale off of legacy. Mr. Trump's son-in-law was admitted into Harvard off of money. So it's okay when it's money and legacy that you can get into these prestigious universities. But when it's just bottom line, hard work, and you fought your way in, and the hint that it's all about affirmative action and he got in because he was black, that might get you in the door, but he still had to perform once he got there. So even if he was a product of affirmative action, he still had to perform once he went to Columbia and once he went to Harvard. And how do you take away the grades that he received to become graduating at the top of his class and the president of the Harvard Law Review? How do you just negate that because you don't know how he got there? I don't even know how that's relevant. I really don't.
What, you know, speaking of relevancy, why is it an issue now? What do you think is an issue now as opposed to 2 years ago? I mean, no one, you know, everybody that talked about President Obama, then at candidate Obama at the time, was looking at how, you know, they touted his as president of Harvard. They touted him being at the head of the law review. They touted all of these accolades, but now all of a sudden here we are almost 4 years later, they're questioning the validity of these accomplishments. Why now?
Well, you have some that would say that some of those questions were always there, but that the media dismissed them and did not, you know, do any investigating into any of the questions, and that it was perceived to be something from those on, you know, on the fringe of the parties that was raising these questions. So now that he's been in office for the amount of time that he's been, and I have to say, I really, you know, honestly don't think they ever felt that he was going to get the nomination. So nobody pushed too hard. That's what they'll tell you as well. No one pushed too hard because they really thought that he would lose out to Hillary and it was really a non-issue. But when it got to be the fact that he was going to get the nomination, he received the nomination, well, it was kind of too late then to bring it all out. That's the argument. So now that we're into almost his second term and time to get into this election mode, then let's now start talking about all those things all over again. The sad part of it is that the birth certificate issue never went away. Even when he produced the document during the campaign trail, that for some that was never enough. And when you have Gallup polls making statements that, you know, 37% and 50% of a certain population did not believe he was born here. That in itself, I don't even understand it. I don't even know how they could think that still, but they did.
Wow. It has really, really been an interesting ride over the last 3 years. Here we are approaching we're on the cusp of course, the presidential election for 2012. So I'm very excited to see what's going to be taking place here next. And also in the news was the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It was last night, and I thought it was pretty hilarious. And when we return, we're going to talk about some of the funniest moments of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and I'm going to take some calls, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Be back in a moment.
Current events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's T-A-I-L-O-R-M-A-D-E LORMADE101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We're discussing several things today, and we're going to be taking a look at the new grand old party, the new GOP. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It was pretty hilarious last night, and I thought the president came off really well. Jimmy, what was one of your funniest moments last night?
One of my funniest moments was the showing of The Lion King as his birth video, because The Lion King is one of my all-time favorite movies. And so for him to use that with all, and you could play around with all of the analogies of the day in terms of, you know, where The Lion King was and what it was all about, and Simba and all of that. You could really take that somewhere. So that to me just showed his extreme sense of humor, as well as, you know, pay attention, because there's a message in everything that I say and do. And so that was one of my highlights, was the whole birth thing with Simba, using that as his date of birth, and how it was so funny that they had the little time stamp down there in the corner as the movie was playing of August 4th, 1961 at 7:34 p.m. I thought that was interesting. Which goes to show you they can time stamp anything. Just want to put that out there.
Right. So did you make anything of Trump's reaction to the jokes that President Obama was saying about him, the things that he was saying about him, or his facial expression? Did you make anything out of that?
Oh, yeah. He was not happy. I mean, he was trying to hold it together. And I think if he could have walked out, he probably would have walked out. But he knew walking out would have just been the end of him, so to speak. So he had to sit there and take it in. And, you know, every now and then you saw a little twitch in his face. And, you know, he had such a scowl. You know, it was, as did some other people in the room, especially those at Fox News, because I saw Bill O'Reilly, he kind of had a little smirk on his face as well. But I think for Donald Trump, It was, for me, I would have paid for that. I would have paid money for that event. I would have paid money for it, just to see the look on his face. From someone who comes off as smug and always in control, he was not in control last night, and that bothered him. That bothered him that he was not in control last night.
So the president mentioned Michelle Bachmann, but he did not mention Sarah Palin. What do you make of that? Him not mentioning Sarah Palin.
Well, for what? She hasn't said anything worth mentioning this week or in the last couple of months. She's kind of been on the outskirts. I mean, she had a few things say about the birth certificate and Donald Trump or whatnot, but she hasn't really made any major, you know, hasn't said anything major, which she very seldom does anyway, but she really hadn't said anything major, so there was no need to mention her. I don't think she's a player right now.
Which brings me to one of the main focuses of the day is really the new grand old party, right? The new GOP. So do you think that the Republican Party is moving forward with these people, or are they stepping backwards with these people? When I mean Donald Trump, Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, Michelle Bachmann, and Rush Limbaugh.
Are they moving forward or stepping back?
Yes.
Oh, I think they're moving. They're not moving forward. I would say they're probably stepping back. They're taking us back to a time, and I mentioned this. They're taking us back to a time of you know now that there's the have and the have nots. You know it, but they're taking us back to a time where it would just be so obvious of the have and the have nots, even in the thought process. People's thought process now is not about being my brother's keeper. It's all about taking care of myself and getting as much as I can for me. And for a nation that has such alleged strong Christian values, and even from that party that wants to be our moral compass, they are not doing one of the main objectives as a Christian, which is to help the least of these. They are hurting the least of these by some of the things that policies they want to introduce. So I would say they're taking us back.
Wow. So speaking of our Christian nation and the moral compass of the Republican Party, this week, actually a little while ago, the Reverend Franklin Graham, whose family has served as spiritual advisors to numerous prominent political figures, told Christiane Amanpour that businessman Donald Trump might be his candidate of choice in 2012, and that he does not think former Governor Sarah Palin will run for president. He says, "Donald Trump, when I first saw that he was getting in, I thought, well, this has got to be a joke," said Graham. "But the more you listen to him, the more you say to yourself, you know, maybe this guy's right." "So he might be your candidate of choice?" Amanpour asked. And then Graham responded with, "Sure, yes." So when you talk about this is a Christian nation, the fact that the Republican Party has historically touted their moral compass and the fact that, you know, they have strong Christian values. And here we have Reverend Franklin Graham basically endorsing Donald Trump. Is this the new face of the Republican Party?
Well, my thing is, at this juncture, none of them has emphatically said they're running. And so until one of them steps up to the plate, they're all playing a game of a double dutch to me, where they're just waiting to get into the jump rope. Everybody has a hesitation move, like they want to get in, but nobody's actually jumping in. So until they actually jump in and then start talking to me about their policies, about what they would change, about current conditions, then it's really for naught. And if he is the new face and all these other people with their extreme ideas, if, you know, and the majority of their attacks, outside of Mitt Romney, the majority of the attacks from the others have all been personal attacks against the president. And I think that's where you kind of have to draw the line. If you disagree with the president, disagree with him and talk about his policies or what he's doing or what he's not doing. But when you have all these attacks against his person, see, then you make it personal. And then you cloud, you know, the field with all of these personal attacks, and we can't even get to the substantive issues, which we have a lot of issues. As we stated at the beginning of the show, we're dealing with gas prices soaring, which means food prices are going to skyrocket, which means somebody's going to have to choose between, we're already making choices between food and medicine already. And so here we are now, we're going to have to go to work or we won't have anything. So, you know, we have some serious choices. Our debt is out of control. We have to talk about spending. We have to talk about reorganizing our debt. What does that look like? How can we do it where the least amount of people is impacted, not the greatest amount? And so those are the conversations I want to hear about. But this particular group, they're not ready to talk about that yet because they're still acting like they want to jump in, but they haven't jumped in yet. Because then to jump in, as a journalist, if I'm a good one, once you jump in, then that's when I talk to you about those things, and you should have an answer. But while you're on the fringe, plan like you want to jump in, I don't have to hold you accountable to anything because you're not responsible.
Well, I like the analogy of the double dutch, you know, and the fact that they're when you keep dipping in and dipping out as if you're going to jump in the race. And when you finally jump into the race, you definitely want to get caught on that rope because those ropes seem to be coming all around you all the time. And so, you know, and as soon as you get caught up, you get tripped up, and then you're out of the game. And so I guess what I would like to see then, if in fact that, you know, Donald Trump, Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, Michelle Bachmann, Rush Limbaugh, if they're not the face of the Republican Party, I would like to see real people that are going to be involved in the race come out and stand up for who the Republican Party really is. Because right now, if I'm on the outside looking in, you know, I'm very interested in the Republican Party. You know, I would like to know, you know, what they're all about, what their issues are. You know, I hear them talking about taxes all the time, but I can't get around these new faces that they keep, you know, hinting of racism, you know, hinting of people that are not well informed. And what I mean about we talked earlier about the fact that they're hinting around racism by all the things around papers and presenting your papers and all of a lot of people talked about Donald Trump this week. But when it comes to these people not really, really informed, it strikes me as odd to have a Republican like Michelle Bachmann come out and say things that are historically inaccurate. For example, Michelle Bachmann tried on Tuesday to explain a historical gaffe she made during a stop in New Hampshire last weekend. In a misstep that landed her in the headlines, Bachmann told a group of local Republicans, "You're the state where the shot was heard around the world in Lexington and Concord." Now, the first shots of the Revolutionary War, however, were not fired in Granite State, but rather in Massachusetts. How can she continue to make these? I mean, this is not something that happened last year, where she made many last year. This is not something that happened 2 years ago, where she also made them then. This is something that just happened a couple of weeks ago. So how is it that, you know, the Republican Party keep putting these people out in front and no one, you mentioned Mitt Romney, or no one that is saying, hey, those people don't represent us. Here's who we are, but they're not doing that. So I would seem to think that this is truly who represents the Republican Party. Because if they didn't, it would be somebody out there saying, no, that's not who they are.
I'm not going to totally disagree with you because I don't think they know who they are. That's the issue. I don't think they know who they are. They're all over the place, and they're all over the place because they've created such a chaotic period with making the midterm election. And here's what they did in the midterm election, and that from the time they were debating the healthcare reform last, you know, summer before last, up until this past election cycle for the midterm, they made this whole thing be about the president and his race. They didn't really make it be about policy. They made it be about the president and his race. Everything that they came out of their mouth had something to do with his birth certificate. He wasn't one of us. I don't know what he was taught over in Kenya. I don't know he's doing all this for the black people, and it's going to be black people that's going to benefit from health care reform, and he's going to kick your grandmother and make the doctor, you know, put her on the death panel. They created all of this stuff, right? And then, you know, November came, and boy, they was riding high. They thought they had done it. You know, they was at the top of their game. They had defeated what they thought to be Obama. All the pundits said that the midterm election was an attack against President Obama. Now now we have all these different states that have gone Republican, and they got these Republican governors, all these things are going on. And now, 6 months after these midterm elections, And you know, 3 months later, you have this upheaval in all these states with these newly elected Republican governors. Because now it's the fringe. It's attack on not just the president, but now we're going to talk about you and your collective bargaining and teachers and education and medicine and Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. And so now all of these things are on the table now that no one has ever talked about before. And yet here at this time, none of these people who are quote-unquote your frontline people have made a declarative, definitive statement as to what they would do that would get us out of this recession, that would grow the economy, that would give us the jobs that we need, that would give us back the value of our dollar, and that would decrease our debt. We're talking about situations that are not really relevant to the everyday person's life. And so when you look at a Trump, you know, making his millions of dollars doing what he does, when you look at Palin, who quit her job as a governor to go make some money, you know, when you look at Beck, who I don't really know what to say about him, you look at Michelle Bachmann, well, you know, truth be told, there's probably a significant portion of Americans that didn't even know she didn't know what she was talking about.
That's right.
That's the sad part about it. I mean, looking at our test scores and how far down we've fallen in terms of our academics, that's probably a significant group of people that didn't even know she was in error until, you know, we found out on the news. So, you know, it was no big deal because we didn't know. So we sit in these rooms, a lot of these people that she's talking to, that she targets, when she's in that room, they get her because that's how they think. They don't know.
That's right.
So you have a whole bunch of people that in the same room together that don't know anything, and so they don't know that the person in front of them don't know nothing because they don't know anything.
So it seems like to me then, well, let me ask you this question first. Do you think it's a possibility that the president will run unopposed in 2012 election?
Oh, no, somebody's going to finally do it. Somebody's going to go on and take the hit and step on up to the plate. They have to. Somebody will, and it'll be somebody that, as they say, can take the hits and can take the beating and be somebody that probably won't run again. So, you know, it won't be, you know, brought up again that they lost so badly to him. So they'll find somebody to follow on the Ford, so to speak. They'll find somebody. But it won't be any of these people that have any ambitions of wanting to do it again.
Yeah, and the reason why that, because I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to go out on a limb here. And I'm going to say that they probably will nominate one of these candidates that we talked about already, mainly because anyone else that comes out really don't want to put forth those millions and billions of dollars that it would take to put on a campaign that they probably know they can't win. They have not been able to present anything of substance over the last 4 years that would remotely sound like a policy that would help anybody in the United States. And this issue with taxes has, I believe, has run its course. And so, therefore, if you beat this dead horse of taxes and cutting the deficit and we've now solved that problem, then you have nothing else to run on. Because you have not prepared yourself to be able to go out and run on that. So I'm going to go on a limb to say, you know, I mentioned, you know, those five people, obviously Donald Trump, Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, or Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. Of course, they won't run, but they'll be the face of the GOP, or the voice of the GOP. And if one of those people were to run, they won't be able to really lose face, right? I mean, if you have a Mitt Romney or you have a Huckabee that runs, you know, someone that's a viable candidate, they don't have that type of money they just want to throw down the drain. They just want to waste on losing to the president because they don't have anything to offer. And so Romney's in a situation where he really can't do anything because he's running on the same health care plan that President Obama put forth, which he joked about at the White House Correspondents' Dinner last night. So, again, my prediction is that, as short of running unopposed, he probably will run against some no-name candidate or somebody that that I mentioned here earlier that, you know, really doesn't have anything to lose because no one was going to expect them to win anyway. It'll just be something that the media will be able to have a field day on. The debates will be probably one-sided. It probably will have a whole lot of interest because if you really look at it, the president is really in a good position to be the next president of the United States to 2012. Your thoughts?
I agree with that. And I think what you'll also find is that you may have a lot of people that may enter, just to get their name out there, to get some name recognition. They know they're not going to be the party's nomination, but they want to test those waters. You know, and it might be a younger, you know, a young person, out there that has aspirations, and so they'll test those waters. But I think at the end of the day, I agree with you. I believe whoever that person is, a lot of what they will try to attack him on will not stand because he will have made some strides. You're talking about the economy. You know, I do believe the economy is going to turn around, is going to get better. So the moment that it gets better and we have those jobs or we see a significant increase in hiring and a decrease in people being terminated, then you will, you know, that won't be the argument anymore. He's already, you know, cut them off as it relates to the whole birth certificate issue. They're not going to be able to talk about whether or not he's well, let me take that back, because now some of the members of the Tea Party is what the Constitution talks about him being a natural-born citizen. So now they want to go into whether or not he's a natural-born citizen. I'm not real sure what that means, but that's the scuttlebutt now as to whether or not he's a natural-born citizen. And so, you know, all of those things, he's slowly chipping away. And what we have to do, those of us that support this president, is that we have to give him time to put his, not only to put the plan in place, but to watch it work. We're such a microwave generation right now that we want everything right now, and we don't want to do what's necessary to take the time. And a lot of us get frustrated with him because he's such a processor. He thinks things through. Even what we would think is a mistake, I think it's calculated on his part. So people say, well, why did he wait so long? That was calculated, that he waited until this moment to put out his birth certificate. I don't think it's just, you know, how they want. I think everything he does for a purpose, and he's thought out the consequences from beginning to end. So for those of us that support him, we've got to give him an opportunity to do the things that he stated he would do. And so for those Republicans, they want to change the story because they don't want to give him that chance. They want to put everything, they want to make us feel like we're in crisis mode, and yet, you know, we see that our numbers on the Dow is going up. But nobody's talking about that. Mm-hmm. They want us to, you know, be on this mindset that we broke and we're about to lose it all if the president don't hurry up and do something. And so, we've got to be smarter than that. As constituents, we have to be smarter than that, and we've got to know that we have some responsibility in how all this turns out as well.
Wonderful. Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank Jima for joining me as always, and go out to see her blog at askjima.blogspot.com. That's askjema.blogspot.com. Now, before we go, I would like to mention also that we're having a Feed the Hungry, a hunger-free summer program at Faith Missionary Baptist Church from June 13th to August 5th. To learn more about the program, go out to tailormade101.com and select hunger-free. Again, we're having a hunger-free summer feeding program for the youth in our community from June 13th to August 5th. To learn more about the program, go out to tailormade101.com and click on Hunger Free. Well, I'd like to thank all our listeners out there today, and it has been a great, great time. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. That's TailorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. Until next time, remember it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.